Good morning, honorable members. The department and those who have joined us out of interest of the work that we are performing, we are starting today our
recording in progress.
Our official meeting of this quarter, and hopefully we will continue to persist with the task at hand on what is expected of us. Without any further ado, we might be having a long day today. But that's the call of duty that we accepted. Can I check, are there any apologies?
Good morning, Chair. This is following apologies. Mema Dokwe, who's currently in the Free State, an area where she indicated that they're struggling with electricity and network challenges there, so she won't be able to attend the meeting. And then also an apology from Mr. Langa, who is unable to attend due to organizational commitments, Chair. Those are the apologies received, Chair. Oh, yeah, and then Ayanda is not in the meeting as she is assisting the Select Committee on Land Reform, Environment, and Mineral Resources and Energy, and Oversight Visits in Limpopo, Chair. Those are the apologies.
Sorry for muting myself and talking at the same time. Can we now go to what we are all about today? Ari?
Chief, yeah,
Mr. Mylem wants to speak, Chief.
Oh, Honorable Mylem.
Chair, I apologize for interrupting you. Chair, can I just check, are we correct?
Yes, we are. Yes, we are,
Chair. I counted that. No. The last time I checked, we are enough to continue with the meeting, but let me check. 1, 2, 3, 4. Once we are four, we are enough to continue with the meeting, though. You only need a quorum when you are going to take decisions. 5, 6 with me. I didn't see Honorable Sohola. Welcome, Mohammed. God, Dr. Bell.
Hi, Chair. Morning, members. I've been around, Chair. It's just that I leave early because at 10, I always have other commitments.
Okay. No, we do Honorable Mylem now. But thanks for reminding me. Rather than you are not disrupting, you are reminding me, rather than to go a long way and only to realize when we are far ahead that we have not done things properly. Okay, Ari?
Well, I'll flag the program, I said, revised program.
Chairperson,
sorry to do this to you. Greetings to you. When you were dealing with apologies, there was a hand from the Deputy Minister.
Okay, Honorable Deputy Minister, welcome. You see, sometimes I don't go to this part too much. That says participants.
Oh, thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, Chairperson and honorable members of the committee. Chair, I just want to tender an apology on behalf of the Minister, Honorable Mantashe, years, attended National Coronavirus Command Council. So he's not going to be in a position to attend today's meeting. Thank you so much.
Okay, now we note that. Thank you for that information. Ari, can you do your job? If it's not, I will give you commission for it.
That's fine, Chair. So we've had the meetings on the 3rd and the 10th already, Chair. Then today's meeting. Tomorrow, we'll be dealing with the briefing by the department on their fourth quarterly performance report for 2020-21. Tuesday, the 24th, a comprehensive briefing by the Department of Mineral Resources and Energy on the risks, threats and challenges in the mining and energy sector. Wednesday, 25, briefing by the Mining Council of South Africa on the involvement of the mining industry in the vaccine rollout. Tuesday, 31, an update by the DMRE on all outstanding forensic reports and consequent management issues. Wednesday, the 1st, then we start with the committee inquiry on the risk mitigation. Tuesday the 7th, update on fuel prices and state of refineries. That update will be by the DMRE. Then Wednesday the 8th, public hearings on the gas amendment bill. Continuation of the public hearings on Friday the 10th of September on the public hearings. Tuesday, 21, then we'll start with the legislation, which deals with the consideration and adoption of the MOD, responses from the DMRE and state law advisors on the submissions of the gas amendment bill. As you indicated last week during the meeting, we might meet after hours as well. So then it's the continuation of responses from the DMRE and state law advisors. Wednesday the 22nd, continuation of deliberations on the gas amendment bill. Friday the 24th, continuation of deliberations. Tuesday the 28th, then we proceed with a clause by clause on the gas amendment bill. Wednesday 29th, clause by clause on the gas amendment bill, as well as Friday the 30th of September. On Tuesday the 5th of October, then we start with the BRRR processes, where on Tuesday the 5th, we'll be having the briefing by the Auditor General of South Africa on the audit outcomes of the Department of Mineral Resources and Energy and its entities, and including that day, briefing by the Department of Mineral Resources and Energy on the annual report for 2020-21. Then on Wednesday the 6th, then we start with the entities of the department. We'll also consider and adopt the committee report on the gas amendment bill. On Thursday the 7th of October, we continue with the briefings by the energy entities, and then Friday the 8th, if need be, a continuation of the briefings by the energy entities on their respective annual reports, and then we'll consider also the committee report on the gas amendment bill. On Wednesday the 13th, we'll table the first draft of the BRRR, and on 15 October, we'll consider and adopt the committee BRRR. So that is the program for the revised third term program, Chair.
Okay, there it is, Honorable Members. I receive the hand of Honorable Mylem. Any other hands? Yes, Honorable Malem, continue.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, just a couple of things. First of all, I see that the program is scheduled to run well into October, but the programming committee has put out the program, and it shows that the NA rises on, the 1st of October. So I'm just curious about that, as to what the plan is, given that the NA will be rising on the 1st of October. My second concern, Chair, is Ari, could I ask you to scroll up earlier in September, please, to the committee inquiry? Here we go. Chairperson, two things here. First of all, I think that you undertook to come back to us with terms of reference for that inquiry, and maybe you could give us some feedback on that. And the second part is, you know, the minister should be probably responding to some of the other inputs that we receive. And I think from an inquiry perspective, we should be getting inputs from various stakeholders, including those who are making allegations of impropriety or problems with the program before the minister and the department responds. So I think that allowing the minister to basically say this is what it is not an inquiry at all. It's basically a briefing. And if we're going to do an inquiry, we need to have someone present what the allegations are and what the various stakeholders who are concerned, what their concerns are, and then allow the minister to respond. Thank you, Chairperson.
Okay, thank you, Honorable Mylem. I see Honorable Volmarans.
Thank you, Chairperson. Am I audible, Chairperson?
Yes, I hear you.
Yes, Chair. Chair, greetings to yourself and greeting to our fellow members from the committee and also the staff component led through Advocate Mogwena. Chairperson, I have just been covered on one aspect which I got from another document that relates to when we rise and when we will be deep into October. So on that one, I'm definitely covered. But when you get to the same slide where we are at the moment, I think that's where Wednesday, the 1st of September, the inquiry, and as spoken before, the terms of reference. I think at another discussion, Chairperson, we heard that the minister, before we get through to everything that deals with the inquiry, we as a committee would have to get the minister to give a brief, to give a background on certain aspects of what we requested before. And I think it will go well into the inquiry after we have had a discussion and or a brief from the department through the minister. And as such, I don't see any problem with the minister briefing us whilst we go into the detail of your terms of reference afterwards and who would be leading evidence and all the other legalities that deals with it. But it would be proper for us to get a background on a number of issues that we have at some stage raised with the minister, Chairperson. Apart from the other dates that deal with the entire program, I think deals with a number of issues that you have discussed before, and I think the program should be adopted, Chairperson.
No other hand.
Thank you, Chair. I wanted to just get more information on the gas hearings Is it one place? And what is the justification of only having it in one place? That is all from my side.
Okay. I will check Honorable Mylem on the issue of, let me start with the first thing. With regards to the program, remember we send the program to the House Chairperson in advance, and having sent it, that's how it reflected. And it's difficult because the question now that the date even goes to exclude even the Beautiful Act. It's a difficult one because we sent the program, the House Chairperson looked at it, and there was no calm. We will see how to adjust in the event it goes through as you suggest. I've just seen myself, but you will recall that it has not been like that as to in terms of the program. So the program reflects what has been the programming of Parliament. On the second thing, I will check the procedure for an inquiry, because remember, we received the briefing from the department with discussions and extensively to agree what has to happen. Now, in this case, when there is an inquiry, first you, and that's the guidance also I received, maybe I can also come in, you first call the executive authority, especially if such are made against that person or have to do with the actions authorized by that person. You then, before you start with the actual work, invite that person to talk to what is, if let me say in inverted commas, what is the allegations. And then based on what you received, you then formulate your terms of reference, the scope, but also your approach, which amongst other things will include potential witnesses that can assist you in the inquiry. So you have to call the executive authority first to account on what is happened. My experience is exactly what we did when we dealt with the issue during the sixth parliament with regards to the executive authority at that time. And that's why I was saying that by experience, you had a situation where from the time that process started and you could not finish with the executive authority, you then receive apologies and other things. How do you exercise the authority of parliament with regards to then making a person appear? Secondly, is that your terms of reference will be guided by the information that you would have received as to what then you would want to probe or to investigate for the benefit of the inquiry. So that is how I got the guidance. But Ari can assist if I'm placing it wrong. Then on the issue, what was the point, Honorable Zungula? I forgot the third point. On the issue of the nature. Now, it's on the agenda, Honorable Zungula. Remember, initially, we had planned that there are two possibilities. I'm just sorry to lead you. There are two options that you have. First is public hearings, which are in the form of oversight, which is provincial visits. Depending on the nature in which we agree as a committee, we then also can do it through oral submissions, subject to the submissions you have received for now. And you don't have to pay to do oversight public hearing. That matter is coming. So it's if you look at the program, it's here on the program that we'll have to make a determination as a committee what nature we want that to take, and we'll be guided again what informs the decision to undertake public hearings in the form of provincial visits, or what do you do, what informs if you take an option of doing them orally on the basis of submissions received? Remember, when you have received those submissions, there will be indication of those who want to give oral submission. Others would say, with their written submission, that they are comfortable for that. So that is contained on the report. Ari, you want to also have a clarity on those administrative processes?
Yeah. Now, with regard to the program, as you've indicated, Chair, the program is sent to the Office of the House Chair for approval, which he approved. And that is what we got from his office, how we must develop our program, Chair. So, but as you've indicated, if there are changes in the parliamentary program, then we'll just have to adjust our program and revise it as well, Chair. But and also with the inquiry, Chair, I mean, you've covered me, Chair. That's it, Chair. Oh, yeah, and with the guest amendment bill, we will be discussing it now, Chair, after this.
Okay. Honorable Mylan.
Thank you, Chairperson, and I'm sorry, I must respectfully disagree with you with regard to the inquiry process. We've already been briefed by the Minister once. We've had extensive discussions around that. And my concern is that we, as the committee and as Parliament, are expected to hold the executive to account. So we cannot be allowing the minister or the department to set the terms of reference. We need to set those terms of reference. And we do that by establishing upfront what we want to examine, what process we will follow, and then getting the allegations put to us, and then allowing the person or entity or department who is alleged to have been in breach of their own procedures or rules or legislation to respond to that. And that's the standard practice of any inquiry anywhere. It's the way that the ESCOM inquiry was conducted. It's the way that the SABC inquiry was conducted. So I just want to say that I think we're putting the cart before the horse by saying that the minister must brief us and then we must develop terms of reference. Chair, it can't work like that. We have to develop those terms of reference up front and then determine who we are going to call, what we want to investigate, and allow the minister and the department to respond to that. I think that this is very, very backwards what we're doing here. And, I mean, we've already had one piece of legal advice from the state law advisor saying that this committee does have the authority to conduct inquiries and oversight and investigations. And if we're going to go down this path, I would urgently request that we get a guidance from the state law advisor or the parliamentary law advisor as to what the procedure should be rather than basically inventing our own. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, I see you, Honorable Mashaule, but let me make a point of correction, Honorable Mylan, on your first statement. At no stage did I say the department or the minister will do the terms of reference for us, one. Two, it depends what experiences do we have. When we received the presentation from the department, it was not on an inquiry. That's the second thing. It was a briefing on what we had seen and said they must come and make a briefing. That's why the minister was not present. It was the department that was present. The minister was not present. So the minister has never accounted to the committee. That's point two. Point three, when we took a decision now that there is a, and that's what parliamentary advisor said, on that part I agree with you 100%, that this committee has a duty. Now, the difference is that the minister, now that's what we want, the minister, not the department. So the minister cannot be substituted by anyone because of the executive authority. It then says, having received that there is this project and the allegations that have been made, having him accounted for that, it then allows you to then know, based on what that minister would have said, It doesn't mean in the process of the inquiry, you cannot then call the minister back again or any other person, especially the minister who would have done that. Doesn't mean you can't call him and say, no, by the way, with our investigation now, now he's coming as what? As a witness. As a witness. But we can do, I don't think it's a problem, we can do the issue of getting how to proceed with an inquiry when you have taken a decision that you proceed with an inquiry, whether you start to formulate and raise the allegations, and then the terms of reference, after the terms of reference, you then start the process of court. But your first point of call and an inquiry. Now, let me clarify. We did it with the then former Minister Swane. That's why I was saying Honorable Lorima will remember. When we did it with him, then we were told the first person you call, before you then formulate what will need to happen, the terms of reference, we only had to do that because he could not come to the committee after he had appeared once. Then we said we need to proceed. The ESCOM inquiry was the same thing. The then Minister of Public Enterprises was the first one to be called to account all the allegations made, and then terms of reference were done differently. The only two things that are different, which is what Parliament has said this committee must do, is that the difference with public enterprise and probably communications was that they had evidence leaders, which Parliament says in our own committee we were never given it, former in the fifth Parliament. So I don't think we may disagree on what comes first and what doesn't. But I don't have that belief that these members of this committee don't know what they have to do to hold the executive accountable. Honorable Mashaule.
Thank you very much, Chair. Greetings to you, greetings to colleagues, and greetings to the department led by the Deputy Minister. Chair, you couldn't have summarized it better, and I'll be wasting time of the committee if I recite what you just summarized, except to say maybe we are at a point where we go back to what Honorable Volmaran said, suggested that we should support the adoption of the report and move forward. Having exhausted that point raised by Honorable Malam and your responses, I think we are sufficiently covered in that regard. Thank you.
Mabota, can you assist also?
Chairperson.
Yes, sir.
You will forgive me. Sometimes you speak while you are muted and finish the sentence when you are unmuted. I did not get what is my body supposed to assist us with?
No, it's an administrative procedure. Okay. There is, let's take it, then there is a mover and a seconder, but we'll get the, if there is anything, but the guidance we have, even from the administrative staff, is that exactly what we need to do. If there is no other matter, honorable members, let's can we apply some degree? We will go back to honorable members because we'll have to adopt the program in principle. If then there are any changes, for an example, if the program is approved and the parliament rises even before we exhaust the progress, we can still subject on the agency, for an example, the issue of the principal arts may not necessarily kick in, but we still have got other outstanding matters that relates to accountability. For an example, I know we took a decision in this committee that some of the entities, including SAF and NACSA, will still have to proceed with some of those issues, in as much as with regards to the normal procedure, they don't table in the NA. So doesn't mean we cannot, when we see that this matter requires that we pursue it. They say I agree. We will weigh some of these things as we go on. Can we now go to item, is it number two or three?
Item two, Chair.
Yes, help us, Adri. That's where Honorable Zungula will get an answer properly.
Thank you, Chair. The Gas Amendment Bill was introduced Parliament on Thursday the 15th in the ATC 2021. It was referred to the committee on Thursday the 29th of April 2021. We received a briefing on the content of the Gas Amendment Bill on Wednesday the 26th of May 2021. During the recess period, the recent recess period, we placed advertisements in various newspapers, two national newspapers, the Mail and Guardian and the Rapport. The advert was also placed in various regional newspapers in all official languages in the specific areas. The closing date for the submissions, for written submissions, was set at Friday, 30th of July. So stakeholders had more or less a month to submit their written submissions, Chair. We've received a total of 19 written submissions, of which 16 indicated that they would want to make an oral submission to the committee. Now, the various options with regard to the public hearings or public participation processes on the Gas Amendment Bill. We schedule virtual public hearings for those who submitted written submissions to make oral presentations over 2 or 3 days, either during committee slots or outside its slots, for the stakeholders who have submitted written submissions. Two, we invite specific stakeholders who might not have submitted written submissions to the public hearings. One and two can maybe go together as well, Chair. Or three, we undertake public hearings to the provinces. Or we identify specific provinces, which can be identified by the researcher and content advisor. Now, I would just like to say, these options are not exhaustive, Chair, so the committee can still make a decision of how to deal with the Gas Amendment Bill public participation processes going forward, Chair. So that's in a nutshell, Chair.
I don't see any help. Honorable members.
Chair.
Let's just go straight to the options. I see Honorable Masaule, Honorable Mylan.
Thank you very much, Chair.
Enecha hand. Okay. It's only the two of you. Continue, Honorable Masaule.
Thank you very much, Chair. I think for us to do justice to the bill, we should follow all three points that are made as options. And on the last point, indeed, identify some provinces and not all, and rely on the wisdom of the content advisor and the researcher through their interaction with the needs and the interest that each province might have. So I think the three options are well thought of, and we should be able to accept them and move forward. We may want to, at a later stage, deal with the proposed dates there to say, will it be sufficient for us to do this with the proposed dates or accepted dates now in the program? But I think this should be acceptable, Chair. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I just want to address specifically point three. And I think that Ariko has laid out the options pretty clearly. And I agree with Honorable Mashwale that we should actually undertake all three options. But specifically with reference to option three, there are three, possibly four provinces in particular that we may need to dig a little deeper into. The first being KwaZulu-Natal and more specifically the Richards Bay area. The second being the Western Cape and more specifically the Mossel Bay and Saldanha areas. The third being the Eastern Cape, and here I'm thinking, and with regard to the fourth province, the Northern Cape as well. But here I'm thinking specifically of hydraulic fracturing and the impact of that. And we may need to go to some inland communities. I'm thinking, if, for example, in the Eastern Cape of a place like Graaff-Reinet or those sort of areas where this is a very sensitive issue. So, Chair, I would suggest that if we are going to undertake actual public hearings on the ground, those would be the kind of venues that I would be looking at. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. I think let's just agree. I'm only worried maybe we'll find a way. We will come back to honorable members. Let's just agree that I'm worried about option two, but I'm willing to leave the speech, because if sometimes those things, they go with, when you make such decision, then the question is, what criteria did you use to identify other stakeholders? Except if it's your traditional stakeholders that you have, but we will see how to handle that. Option two sometimes tend to be very technical and challenging. I think let's agree in principle that we will take, and I will take note of what you suggest, Honorable Maile, but let's just take a principle. Maybe we can come back to this committee and place those, I think what you are doing, you are also assisting to say, don't just identify the province, identify key areas or districts or places that you would want in that province to target. I think that's what we will do, and then we can make a motivation why. I take, for instance, if we say we go to the Eastern Cape, this is the area that we are going to target and move forward with regards to what then needs to be done in preparation for that. Is there any other matter, Honorable Members? Because there seems to be consensus on this.
Honorable Kula, Chair.
Babu Kula and then Zongula.
No, thanks. Greetings to colleagues in the Portfolio Committee and the Department. I think, Chair, firstly, it's good for the committee when Honorable Mailam agrees with suggestions that are raised by Honorable Mashaul. I think we are making progress as a Portfolio
Committee.
I think I agree with the options that are available there. The way you put it, Chair, that in each and every province, we'll then need to identify a specific area which will then be visited by the committee. Then it gives me a problem how we have coined option two, that we invite specific stakeholders. If in a province will then I be able to identify an area which will then have to be a visit to be undertaken. Even here, this point must be put clear that if we must invite specific stakeholders, we must be able to say as this committee that which are those stakeholders, even if not now, but at the later meeting, so that we agree on those stakeholders, so that we don't appear that we are biased, we invite these ones, we don't invite others. So we must agree in our next meeting that which stakeholders are going to be invited, which have not submitted written submissions during public hearings. I think that point will need to attend to it, so that there's no level of biasness on our part as a portfolio committee. Thanks.
Okay. Honorable Zongon.
Thank you, Chair. I want to agree with the notion that we need to have all three options in order to do justice to the bill. However, I want to raise the exact point that the previous speaker just spoke about, Honorable Kula, on the issue of the biasness. If the invites do not create a perception of bias, I think that will assist us. However, if a perception is created that the hearings were biased towards certain stakeholders, then we might find ourselves in difficulty. So we just need to find a way to do the invite, but in a way that is not seen to be biased. That is also my side.
Okay, no, that's fine. Honorable members, I think the point, that's why I was saying exactly that on option two, was definitely we'll have to account and explain why we invited Kula and Associates to make submission. For an example, there could be, I'm just making an example, at times, people that we usually invite when we deal with specific items, like professors at a university to say that, but we will have to justify to the committee, because you would have been able to ask for public comments, which now were finalized. You would have been able to go to community to identify certain areas through the public participation processes, and you will then have to, it could be interpreted that even your own stakeholders may not have had an interest in the process, or the process has just gone past them. All what we are saying, when it comes to option two in particular, we will have to come and account in this committee if that situation arises, why we then say let's invite so and so. But that's why we're saying it's not necessarily something that we foresee now. But I think there's consensus. We will take, we'll come back to the committee now with progress with regards to which areas and which provinces that will be targeted for public hearings. If we need to do motivation, like Honorable Mylem had done, we will then even give that motivation why we choose this area. Maybe in some areas we may even have to stay more than 2 days or if we identify. Maybe in other areas it could be just 1 day because there's one area that you are targeting. So we will look at that. Can we go now to the next item, Ari? Oh, wait. I think there is consensus. I don't want to say. Honorable Mashaule made the proposal. I think Honorable Mylem seconded. Other members were just adding on what has already been agreed upon. Can we now go to... Where is my agenda, Ari?
The briefing by the department, say, on the licensing.
Department, the briefing by the department on the licensing regime. Honorable Deputy Minister DM, let me say this whilst we welcome you on your first assignment to this portfolio committee. You are welcomed. We are looking forward on those frequent interactions. We are sure that we will continue to have those interactions with the secretary through the minister or the deputy minister. So you are welcome today. Let me say it in advance. I hope the new OTG, DG, are still here. I've got my, let me state this so that even tomorrow or any other day when I put my grievance, it's very important to get a briefing. But it's very important that that briefing must go straight to the point so that we can know if there are challenges, how to assist the department, if there are areas that we feel that they require more emphasis, we can say so. I always have my grievance with the department that sometimes we're reading a word by word up until to the end. Makes us as if we don't understand English. It's important that whilst we can read, we go to the points that we think they are necessary without less details, but with more of assisting as far as information is concerned. So it is my only thing. So when I sometimes raise, I always say I don't like a restation. The questions of the, like, common examples of mandates and so forth and so forth, some of those things we know. I appreciate if any briefing to the committee is straight to the point. It assists us also to have a better understanding of development. Without any further ado, you are the one most definitely who is leading the delegation. Let me give it to you, Deputy Minister.
Thank you so much, Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee. Please bear with me. I'm in the Bundus. My network is quite very bad. I'm going to switch off my video, Chair. The Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee, Honorable Zipo, Honorable Members, the DG and heads of various entities, guests, ladies and gentlemen, I greet you all. Chairperson, let me thank you for this opportunity and extend my appreciation for the work done by this committee. Your tough oversight and critical line of questioning are very imperative for this department and its entities. It should be noted that we won't take these efforts and your guidance lightly. Chair, let me also take this opportunity to introduce the staff component, the management of the department led by the DG. In our midst, we have the DG, Advocate Mukwena. We have Mr. Makubela. We have Mr. Mbambo, Mr. Caesar. We have Ms. Mwabe. We have Ms. Kamede. We have Advocate Malebe. We have Ms. Tsongo. We have Ms. Maimane. We have Mr. Mukati. With Ms. Liso. Then from the NESA side, Mr. Sibanda is not in attendance today. The person who is going to be leading the delegation is Mr. Mukwena. We also have Advocate Sithole, Mr. Mukwena, and Mr. Kumede. Honorable members, as the directive of the Portfolio Committee, we have been assigned to brief the Portfolio Committee on the licensing regime on both minerals and energy. The presentation will be more of regulation and compliance perspective. Honorable members, as the legislators, we ought to take context into account and not prescribe one-size-fits-all solutions when performing our responsibilities when we are reforming the policies or either amending some of the relevant statutes in the sector. Our interventions should be more informed by the challenges we encounter executing our responsibilities on day-to-day basis, and well should be informed by the magnitude of the problem. Honourable members will remember that in the previous meeting held on the 3rd of March 2021, the department presented to the Portfolio Committee the license application backlog as well as the turnaround plan in order to address the backlog, of which we were directed to implement the plan in order to eradicate the license application backlog within a period of 3 months. Furthermore, we were directed to present an improved plan for the South African Mineral Resources Administration online application system within the period of 6 months, which also be included in the 2021-2022 annual performance plan. Honourable members, we are pleased to brief the Portfolio Committee that we have already started rolling out the program of clearing mining license backlogs in Mpumalanga, which has the highest backlog. As far as the configuration and installation of the electronic application system is concerned, it is still in the procurement process. Chairperson, allow me to quote Judy Kepa, who once said, "Don't let the good crisis go to waste." For me, this translates to the fact that there may be some bottlenecks in the system and the sector as a whole, but together with the members of the Portfolio Committee, we are going to turn around the tide, and resilience is the only hope we have in turning the fortunes of our economy. We understand that there are competing demands that you are currently facing, as well as the shortage of staff, and the fact that we don't have the chairperson currently of NESA, but we are hoping that in 2 weeks' time, the minister would have appointed the chairperson because it has been signed off. I will then hand over to the DG to lead the presentation. Thank you, chairperson.
Thank you very much, DM. Greetings to the chairperson of the PPC and all honourable members of the PPC in attendance, the colleagues from the department, as well as the support staff from Parliament and also Ministry. I would not want to dwell very much on other issues. I will just give the outline because we have the DPG that is responsible for both minerals and petroleum that will be taking us through the presentation, and that would also be followed by NERSA as well. In terms of the background, I think DM has covered all key points. As you can see, Chair and honorable members, without taking you through the table of contents, it is self-explanatory. And now, without any waste of time, Chair, with your indulgency, I would like to invite DDG Makubela, who will be taking the honorable members through the presentation. Over to you, DDG Makubela.
Thank you very much, DG. Thank you to the Honourable Deputy Minister, Chairperson, Honourable Members of the Portfolio Committee, Committee staff, guests of the committee, good morning. It is indeed an honour to once again appear before the committee to present the update on the backlog. If we can move straight to slide number 5, because as DJ has indicated, the DM, the slides before, please. Because the DM has covered the introduction that we were here, and we then committed that we would deal with the backlog. So we are here to present the update, and I must say that we are pleased that we have been able to make some progress in the intervening period. So we had started implementing the turnaround in Mpumalanga Regional Office, as DM has indicated. And I must say here that Chair and Honourable Members, that the team in Mpumalanga did not disappoint. I believe that the numbers will speak to themselves when we get to the particular slide. We are also pleased to report that we have made sure that in the annual operational plan, we have included the matters that the committee had raised with us. Of course, we will see whether we then escalate them to the annual performance plan of next year. However, we believe that by that time, the issues or the concerns about backlog should really be, to a large extent, be matters behind us. The procurement of the online system, as DM has indicated, is underway. The clearing of the backlog is work in progress. Next slide. So we decided that we would focus on the work done between the time we last appeared before the committee and basically today. And I must indicate that the numbers reflected here are from March to the end of July. The work that we have done in August is not yet included here because, of course, the preparation for appearing before the committee, we always have to make sure that we finish the presentation ahead of time. In terms of prospecting licenses, we were able to conclude 438 licenses in the period, in the intervening period. This is March to July of this year. We also were able to, my apologies, we're also able to conclude 69 renewals as indicated there. And then as far as the ceding of rights, as well as the amendment of prospecting rights, we then were able to conclude 9 and 4 respectively. So Section 11 refers to the ceding of or transfer of a right, and then Section 102 deals with the amendment of either a prospecting right or a technical work permit, a program or a mining right or any other amendment. That's what Section 102 deals with. Next slide, please. In terms of mineral rights application, very critical because I think also these then unlock more value in terms of you know, the mining sector. We're able to conclude 34 new applications in the intervening period, and then renewals, there were 14. The Section 11 that I referred to, the sessions 19 were concluded, and then in terms of the amendments, there were 15 done, and then 47 that deals with the Social and Labor Plan, SLP, as indicated there. In total, basically, we were able to conclude then 649 applications in the intervening period. Of course, this excludes the mining permits, which are then done in the regions by the various regional managers. If I move to the provinces, in terms of the provinces, Eastern Cape doesn't have much by way of mineral prospectivity. So the numbers there may look small, but even with that, there is a lot of work that the colleagues have to do in the region. So there was progress in terms of the mining rights, having concluded 7 of those, and we have now reduced that to 11 that are outstanding at the end of July. And then in as far as prospecting rights, again, the numbers speak for themselves. There was a substantial a reduction, more especially on mining permits. There was a significant reduction by almost 50%. In terms of the sessions in the Eastern Cape, there were no applications and there are none that are outstanding for Section 11. These are the transferring of rights and or ceding of rights. And then renewals, we still have the 10 that was outstanding, in March. And of course, I must say that some of the numbers also include new applications that would have come in the intervening period. So when you see the 10 and 10, it doesn't mean nothing was done in the Eastern Cape in as far as renewals are concerned. Next slide, please. In the Free State, there is no appreciable backlog. As we indicated even the last time, some of the numbers are in the single digits. This is giving us an opportunity to then redirect resources to areas where they are required. So in terms of the mining rights, I won't go through all the numbers, but they really show a downward trend, quite a significant reduction in the number of outstanding permits. Of course, this doesn't mean now that the colleagues in the Eastern Cape don't have a lot of other challenges, because the same team has got to also make sure that there is compliance with the various work programs that licensees have signed up to. Next slide, please. On Gauteng, I think here we have picked up actually a trend going the other way. We have seen a reversal in Gauteng in as far as the backlog is concerned. And the reason for that, I need to explain that in Gauteng, we lost two officials resigned, including the regional manager. And we haven't been able to fill the vacancies that had arisen in the area of mine economics in that province. And the resignation of the regional manager actually exacerbated the situation. There is an acting manager, a regional manager in Gauteng. However, we still have this mine economics experts that we need to appoint, and we can therefore not process as many applications as we would want without that the expertise of mine economics. So this is a province where we are going to have to redirect resources until such time as the vacancies are filled. Because as you would notice there hasn't been movement on mining permits, which are supposed to be concluded by the regional manager. Prospecting applications have also increased. Sessions, they've come down. But I think in the area of renewals, again, we've seen an increase. In KwaZulu-Natal, let me just indicate that there is a vacancy in as far as the regional manager is concerned. However, we redirected the resource from head office to go and act in KZN, and we believe that he is doing good work in as far as that is concerned. KZN had two disruptions, which in my view were significant, but again, even with that, there was a reduction in as far as prospecting rights are concerned, mining permits, the sessions have come down, renewals have come down quite significantly. But the disruptions that I want to talk to is the fact that there was a closure of the office due to COVID, but also a lot of the work of the province, the office was disrupted when there was the so-called diamond rush because that then meant that colleagues had to deal with that in as far as making sure that one, the department is able to intervene to one, stop people from, having more environmental damage in the area, and also indicate that even if these were quartz crystals, permits are still required in order to do the work. So there was that disruption during this period. In Limpopo, there's been progress made in as far as mining rights processing are concerned, prospecting rights, as well as the permits. There's also been progress on sessions as well as renewals. So the trend there, I think, is showing a downward one, which I think is quite significant in as far as reducing the backlog is concerned. I want to move on to Mpumalanga, where most of our efforts were. And to say here that you may see that in certain instances, there are permits that are outstanding, but a lot of work has been done by the Mpumalanga team, where we were focusing most. So when we last came to the committee, we had applications dating back to 2012. And I must say that as we speak, there are no applications dating back to 2012. We had applications dating back to 2013. We've dealt with those. 2014, the team has dealt with those. 2015, the team has dealt with those. And we basically wanted to make sure that we follow what is prescribed in the MPRDA, that we process those applications that came in first so that no one is disadvantaged as we deal with this backlog. So I must indicate that in as far as Mpumalanga is concerned, they were able to then conclude 265 applications in the intervening period. And this again excludes the mining permits, which are concluded by the regional manager. And those were quite significant as well. But as things are in Mpumalanga, there are a lot of applications that come in, so you may see that in the area of mining permits, as we process some of the mining permits, there are new ones that come in. So that impacts on the ability of reducing that backlog. But in as far as the years are concerned, on prospecting as well as mining rights, we believe that we've done significant work in that province. And how we did it was that we did not bring a team from outside. We said the team in the province are going to be the ones that sort out the issue. All we did from our side is to ask as to what resources the management requires in the province, what support they need, but in as far as the intervention is concerned, they are the ones who were then tasked. Meetings on a Monday that were taking place to make sure that the commitments of the previous week are then met, and that basically continued under the leadership of the chief director to make sure that we make progress. So that is how we managed in Mpumalanga. So now that template is now going to be used in all the the provinces. Yes, there may be differences, but we believe that it works. So you empower the people in the region, and then they must give them the tools, they must do the work. The headquarters, head office must be supportive. When applications arrive at head office, they must be processed, and they go back with an outcome. So if I move on to the next slide, it's Northwest. Northwest progress is being made in Northwest, even though we are encountering in the Northwest quite a number of challenges in as far as community-related challenges, but also protests. But more importantly, I think the issue of illegal mining does impact on the ability of the regional office to fulfill its obligations, because whenever there is illegal activity reported, it is the regional office that must go and establish what the facts are on the ground, and then be able to inform the compliance team together with the law enforcement agencies in order to deal with that. Now, what we've seen with chrome, for example, is that the illegal digging happens at night, and then the transport happens during the day. And it is a challenge to actually keep track of that, but we do have interventions that we are working on with the police under the leadership of the DG and the National Commissioner. Next slide. In as far as the Northern Cape, I want to indicate that you will see that the trend is moving in the opposite direction. We have picked that up. One, Northern Cape is an area of increased prospectivity. So there are a number of new applications that come through. But also we have seen that the team in the Northern Cape requires attention. And that attention, we've already met with the team. We have indicated, we have followed the same process we followed in the Northern Cape to say, what are the challenges? These numbers are not looking okay. And we have then taken a decision that we will bolster Northern Cape with staff from the Western Cape as well as the Free State, because they all fall under one cluster, which we call the Central cluster. I will talk to that perhaps towards the end, but that is what we have done, because those numbers are actually not acceptable in the way that we've been progressing. So it's going to be an area of focus, Northern Cape, going forward. Next slide. The Western Cape, perhaps more like the Free State, what we are seeing there is that the numbers are going down, and there aren't many applications. Even the ones that are outstanding, I must say that the majority of them are due to outstanding environmental appeals that have been lodged with Environmental Affairs. Without that, actually, we would be in a position to reduce this even more significantly going forward. In as far as challenges, I think I've touched on them, but the main one relates to closures. Now, I must say that this is not really an excuse, because whenever there is a positive case in the region, the colleagues work in a small space. So if one of them test positive, then it has an impact effectively on the whole office in terms of isolation and the closure of the office. So when you have those in the different regions, then this does have an impact on the ability to process application. Also to indicate that during the different levels, lockdown, we then have to adjust the number of persons that are, you know, supposed to be in the office at any given time. And during this time, we were, of course, in level 4 at some point. And I think that then did have its own impact on the ability of the staff to be in the office. We also find it difficult to move staff to other provinces, especially when you have a level 4, which then prevented the movement across the provinces. But also as management, we have to take into account that safety even of our own employees is quite critical, even though the work has got to proceed as well. Connectivity, I think, was an issue for us because we still, in the majority of the offices, use desktops. There was a delay in the procurement of the laptops. And then this was really not due to the department as such, but due to the inability of the service provider to deliver on time. Because the laptops themselves, the contract had been awarded before. I've spoken to the issue of the staffing to deal with the volume of work. One of the things that the minister and the DG have said is that we need to relook the structure of the branch, but also of the whole department. And that is work that is currently underway. In terms of interventions, we've said that, for example, the challenge that we suffered in outing of the loss of mine economics experts, we need to then reskill some of our colleagues and make sure that we encourage multi-skilling within the branch. We also need to finalize the recruitment process to fill critical positions. I think this has taken way too long, and we need to actually accelerate this. I've spoken to the issue of laptops. There are areas where we have to institute consequence management, and that is already underway, where colleagues claim to have gone somewhere to conduct an inspection, for example, only to find out that they actually never went on those inspections. So we do have those, but I think the key thing is that there must be consequences swiftly when those are uncovered. Then we have spoken to the temporary assignment of personnel from Western Cape, Free State, to assist in the Northern Cape. We also have taken a decision that we will relocate the regional office from Gqeberha to East London because to be more central, as most of the applications come from the central part of the Eastern Cape. We think that it is necessary that the office is closer to where most of the activity is. The online system, I think we've spoken to that. I won't talk much about that one. The SAMRAD update, I think as was indicated by the DM, all I can say is that the service provider is expected to, that appointment is expected by end October. I won't say much here, because then there's still the bidding process that is underway. And next slide, please. Briefly on the petroleum side, we wanted to show progress So just to explain the table, the granted talks to those applications that have been approved, refused speaks to say those that have been refused. The ones that are accepted are the ones that are still within the system. They are accepted. It means they need to still be analyzed. So in as far as the progress since the last time we came to the committee's concern, is that we were able to then conclude during this period 817 applications where a decision was taken, and the different categories speak to themselves. All I want to say here is that we're seeing a lot of wholesale applications, and this is an area that is going to require some intervention because some of the people that apply for wholesale licenses effectively use consultants, and we believe that the majority of those who apply through consultants have very little chance of actually succeeding in the sector because they had all their applications prepared by somebody, and you find that they actually do not understand very well how the sector operates. The other issue of concern is the change of hands, which is the retail COH, apologies for that. And NTI is new to industry and COH is change of hands. What we are worried about is the number of service stations that are changing hands. I think that is an indication of trouble in the sector, but of course a lot of small businesses have been impacted by COVID-19, so we think that the retailers as well are also being impacted by that. On the next slide, so the challenge is on the petroleum side. It's again similar that we had the closure of the Matimba building numerous times, and that then had an impact on the ability to process. So that really is the one that has an impact. And then the high volume of applications, particularly the wholesale. And then I've spoken to the financial distress on the retail side. Lastly, in terms of interventions, I think on the petroleum side, we introduced overtime work during the weekend, and we're really able to claw back the backlog that had been caused by the hard lockdown last year. We believe that now we are where we are supposed to be in terms of the petroleum applications. PPALS, Petroleum Products Act licensing system, has been updated. So what we are going to be doing now, instead of transmitting files through a courier, we are now, from the end of this month, going to be able to transmit all the information electronically so that the analysis can be quick. So that is going to be implemented with effect from the 27th of August. And as indicated there, the turnaround time will improve, and also we can update, the client through a cell phone as to where we are in terms of the decision-making process. With that, I would like to thank Chair and honorable members for the opportunity to present. Thank you.
Oh, thank you, Chair. To you, honorable Chairperson and honorable members, allow me to invite Nessa to do the presentation. Mr. Mkwena will introduce the presentation, and the CEO will get to the presentation in detail in that sequence. Thank you.
Sorry, DM. Mr. Mgwana, take into yourself. Unmute.
Okay. No. Thank you very. Thank you very much, Deputy Minister. Thank you for introducing myself. Thank you, DG. I've been requested by Mr. Sbanda to lead the delegation from NERSA, and I will only introduce the colleagues and therefore request the Chief Executive Advocate Nomalanga to take us through the presentation. We are joined by Advocate Nomalanga Stola, who will lead us in the presentation, the Chief Executive, and then we're also joined by Ms. Nomfundo Maseti, responsible for the Part S regulation, and also Mr. Muzim Chizo, who's responsible for the petroleum pipelines regulation, and of course, Mr. Nhlanhla Kumete, responsible for electricity regulation. Given the space of time, Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee and the Honorable Members, I will therefore hand over to Advocate Nomalanga Stola to proceed with the presentation. We will join later on if there's a requirement to respond to any specific question. Over to you, Advocate. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mugwena. Good morning, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members of the Portfolio Committee, Honorable Deputy Minister, Director General, DDGs, Chairpersons and Board Members, and colleagues present in this meeting. Chair, with your permission, may I be assisted with sharing the presentation? Thank you very much with assistance. So in terms of the presentation, we have been requested as NERSA to prepare a presentation on the NERSA licensing process and for the three regulated industries, namely the pipe gas, petroleum pipeline, pipe gas, and electricity industries. And in terms of the presentation outline, this is the format that we will be following. Next slide, please. Chairperson, with regard to the next three slides, I'm not going to go through them because they outline the pieces of legislation that governs NERSA in terms of its regulatory mandate. And with your permission, Chair, I'll just move on to the next slide, which would be slide 6. In terms of this particular slide, Chairperson, we're highlighting the manner in which we have grouped the regulatory activities of NERSA. They are grouped in terms of 6 programs, and the first one, which is on setting and approval of tariffs and prices, the licensing and registration program, the compliance monitoring and enforcement, the dispute resolution, including mediation, arbitration, and handling of complaints, and as well as a program on setting of rules, guideline codes for the regulation of the three industries, and as well as establishing NERSA as an efficient and effective regulator. So with regard to the petroleum pipeline industry, we thought it would be appropriate for us just to share the slide in terms of the value chain of this particular industry and highlight as well what is being regulated by NERSA. And in terms of the slide, NERSA regulates the downstream part of the value chain, which is the loading facility, the pipeline, and as well as storage. And the other parts of the value chain, for example, the upstream is regulated by the South African Petroleum Pipeline, and the Department of Mineral Resources and Energy is responsible for the regulation of refining, wholesaling, and as well as retailing. Next slide, please. Honorable Chairperson, in terms of the licensing, licenses that are issued by NERSA in relation to the regulation of the petroleum pipeline industries, we have construction licenses, operation licenses and conversion licenses. And these licenses are issued for a period of 25 years. And it's important, Chairperson, for me to indicate that for a conversion license, NESWA, since its inception, it hasn't received this type of application. So we have mostly been issuing out licenses on construction and operation. And these licenses are issued in terms of the facilities that are stated below, which is for a pipeline facility, loading facility, a storage facility, or a combined facility, which would cover the pipeline, the loading, and as well as the storage facility. Next slide, please. Chairperson, on this particular slide, we are outlining the process that we follow as a regulator in analyzing applications that we have received in terms of the Petroleum Pipelines Act. In terms of the first pre-stage, which is the pre-licensing stage, Chair, in this stage, what we do as NESWA, we have pre-engagement meetings with potential applicants who are interested in obtaining a license within the petroleum pipeline industry. We share with them the requirements and the process of actually submitting that the particular application that they want to launch with the regulator. And based on the information that we do receive from an applicant, we then assess the adequacy of the information contained in the application. And where we believe that the information is inadequate, we then engage the applicant or the prospective applicant in terms of what is it that is outstanding. And this period would normally take us approximately 30 days. But I must say that the period may be lessened if all the information that is outstanding is received with speed from an applicant. We also have, Chairperson, and we also deal with issues of confidentiality. In terms of this particular step, normally you would find that an applicant will provide information in its application and indicate to NESWA that a particular portion of the information provided in the application is confidential. So what NESWA would do in terms of Section 16 of the Petroleum Pipelines Act, it needs to assess that particular information that is said to be confidential. And in doing so, it takes into account the requirements of PAEA and other relevant regulatory processes that needs to be taken into account in determining the confidentiality of that information. And we would then respond back to the applicant as to whether we believe what they said is confidential. It is indeed confidential. If not, we'll still do and indicate that to the applicant. Chairperson, we also, in terms of the process of application, an applicant is required to publish its application to solicit comments to interested and affected parties in terms of that application. And those comments, in the notice that it gets published, there will be an indication amongst others as to who should those objections be submitted to, which would be the regulator. And based on the objections we receive, we then forward them to the applicant for the applicant to respond. And following that, we then have a public hearing. When a publication of the application has been done in terms of the notice issued by the applicant, if there are no objections, and the process will move on to the finalization of the application, which in terms of the Act, we are required as a regulator to finalize that application within 60 days. So in total, it should take us approximately 120 to 210 working days. And I must emphasize, Chairperson, that this period may be shortened depending on the speed within which the applicant responds to some of the objections or to any other issue that may be raised. And also, again, where we have delays, it may be due to certain other issues, such as the complexity of the issues that are raised in relation to the application. And next slide, please. Next slide. Thank you. Chair, on this slide, we are highlighting the licenses that have been issued for the petroleum pipeline industry. And as mentioned, we have two types, operation licenses and construction. For the operation licenses, as at 31st of March, we have issued a total of 223 licenses. And the type of licenses issued, the type of operating licenses issued by the regulator are indicated per province. As an example, the operation license that we have issued per province are indicated in this line. The pipeline for storage facilities, I beg your pardon. But we have issued about 180, and the numbers are indicated per province. And operation licenses for pipeline facilities, they're indicated as well. We have issued a total of 18, and the loading facilities, we have indicated the licenses that we've issued per province as well. So with regard to construction licenses, as at 31st March 2021, we have issued a total of 62 licenses, and in terms of the total of 62, we've got 6 that are still in progress. We've got those that are at pre-construction stage, or they are on hold, which are 8. Those that have been completed are 40. Those that have been revoked on the basis of the fact that they have been completed or there's change of ownership, they are 3, and there are those that have been revoked on the basis that the project or projects have been terminated. We've got 5 of them. As I've indicated earlier on, for a conversion license chairperson, we have not yet received such an application since NESA was established. Next slide, please. In terms of the next slide, we are sharing with the committee the license that have been issued in terms of the BEE component of those licenses, and as well as the investment that has been made based on the licenses that have been issued. Okay, on this side of the slide, where there is a pie chart, we are indicating that in terms of this block, or indicating a 22% portion, we do not have a black ownership in terms of the licenses issued in this within this particular portion of this pie chart. And on the portion of the 43% that we've indicated there, we have about more than 25% of black ownership. And on the portion of this 15% here, we've got a portion of more than 50% of black ownership. And then on this particular 10% here, we've got 100% black ownership in terms of the licenses issued. And on this last light blue 10%, this relates to licenses that have been issued to state-owned entities such as Transnet, DSF, and Petro SA, to mention a few. With regard to construction licenses, on this side, yes, in terms of construction licenses issued from January 2018 to July 2021, in terms of the 6 projects that we have licensed, the investment thereof amounted to 4.753 billion, and the construction projects that have been completed, which are 7, for the same period, and the investment thereof has been 5.64 billion. And next slide, please. Chairperson, in terms of this particular slide, I would not go into it into detail, but it's just a slide that indicates that when an applicant applies for a license within the petroleum pipeline industry, there are certain supporting documents that the regulator requires from the applicant, and these supporting documents are required in terms of Section 16 of the Act, and as well as the rules that we have passed in terms of Section 33 of the Petroleum Pipelines Act. And the list that we have provided there is fairly straightforward. Here on the next slide, in terms of what we do when we license within the Petroleum Pipelines Act, we are empowered as a regulator in terms of Section 20 of the Petroleum Pipelines Act to impose condition of a license. And in terms of those conditions, Chairperson, for petroleum pipelines industry, we have classified them in the manner that they appear in this particular slide. I won't also go through them because they are fairly straightforward, Chairperson, but it is important to indicate that in addition to having had license conditions imposed on a licensee, we do follow up in terms of compliance with those particular license conditions. And where there is a contravention of the license condition, we do serve the licensee with a non-compliance notice and giving the licensee a period within which to rectify that particular act that is not in compliance with its license condition. Next slide, please. Chairperson, I think this slide is the last slide on the petroleum pipeline industry. We are basically indicating the main challenges that we are faced with as a regulator in licensing activities within the petroleum pipeline industry. And we are suggesting corrective actions. And in terms of that, we have highlighted the first challenge as an indication of the fact that petroleum pipelines projects are capital intensive in nature, and therefore there should be funding made available for such particular projects. And again, Chair, there is also a challenge in providing financial abilities for bankability, particularly in relation to new entrants. And we are proposing that, or suggesting that, securing a product supply or signing of takeoff agreements may alleviate this particular challenge. And we also have a challenge of third-party actors within the industry, and we are proposing that there is a need to determine uncommitted capacity on a forward-looking basis. Chair, there's also a challenge within the industry in terms of transformation, and we believe as the regulator that if joint ventures or strategic partners amongst many other options that could be used to sort of address this particular challenge. There's also a limited competition within the industry, and we believe that structural issues may have to be dealt with to be able to remove some of the barriers that are limiting competition. And lastly, Chairperson, we have indicated a challenge with the regulatory burden or overlapping mandates. I think we have shown in that value chain slide that I showed in terms of the structure of the industry, and that structure does indeed create an overlap in terms of mandates. And we are saying that we need to have those overlapping mandates addressed, Chairperson. And in terms of how we believe we can address some of these challenges from a legislative point of view, we are saying that certain provisions that could be added or enhanced in the Petroleum Pipelines Act and the regulations, we have listed those three bullets there in terms of what is it that can be added to the PPA and the related regulations, and as well as the need to address the fragmented regulation we have seen in terms of the value chain within the industry. And we are saying that there is a need to address the overlap or the concurrent mandates that currently exist. And Chairperson, we also are saying that there is a need to support, or rather for funding to support new entrants within the industry. Chairperson, moving on to the gas industry as well, what we have done, we have highlighted this particular slide that indicates the value chain of the natural gas and of the industry. And we are saying as NESA regulates the downstream part of the value chain. And in terms of that, we have listed the exact areas that are being regulated by the regulator, and as well as provided an indication of the end users and next to the areas that are being regulated. Chairperson, is also important for me to indicate that NESA also is responsible for the registration within the pipe gas industry. And in terms of that registration, we register entities that are involved in activities of gas in terms of production and importation thereof, and as well as those entities that are involved in activities of gas for purposes of own use. As NESA, we do have a mandate to register those particular activities. Chairperson, the next slide as well highlights the types of licenses that can be issued within for any interested party who wants to get a license within the pipe gas industry. There are mainly four of them: construction, conversion, operation, and trading in gas. For construction, it is for transmission, storage, distribution, liquefaction, and regasification facilities, and the same for the conversion in infrastructure and operation. Chairperson, the next slide, we are highlighting the processes that we are following as NESA when we analyze an application that we have received from an entity or person interested in having a license within the gas industry. And Chair, I would not want to go through all those steps. They are fairly straightforward, other than to highlight as well the fact that there is also within the gas industry a need for NESA to deal with a confidentiality request from an applicant in the same manner as I've explained on the other side with regard to the petroleum pipeline industry. The request as well for an applicant to advertise its application and as well as holding of notices where there are holding of public hearings where there are objections, and we have given ourselves time frames in terms of by when we should be holding those public hearings. And as well, Chairperson, we are required in terms of the Act to finalize all the license applications that we have received once we have followed all the required processes within 60 days and chair and communicate that to the licensee. Chair, the time that it takes us to deal with these licenses, it could vary from 90 days to 120 days, depending on whether there are objections and as well as the speed within which the applicant responds to the objection and as well as the issue of the complexity of the issues that would have been raised in the objections. Chairperson, the Honourable Chair, the next three slides, I would not want to go through them, but just other than to indicate that those slides, they are outlining the supporting documents that are required for an application for a license within the gas industry. And Chairperson, these documents are required in terms of a provision in the Act, which is Section 16 of the Gas Act. And again, Chairperson, in terms of this particular slide, we do have engagement with the applicants prior such that we minimize the period that it will take to have a complete application ready for submission to NESA. Chair, we'll then move on to slide 24, the slide which indicates the licenses that NESA have issued so far. We have issued a total of 254 licenses. We have withdrawn three, we have revoked seven, and we have not granted two of the application. Chair, these licenses, those that have been issued, are issued for a period of 25 years. Chair, again, in terms of the next four slides, Chairperson, I would not want to go through them because these slides are indicating the fact that in terms of the Act, the regulator is empowered to impose license conditions in the same manner as in the petroleum pipeline to a license that is going to be issued. And in line with those conditions, we do monitor them, and as well as the fact that where there's non-compliance with the license condition, we do issue out notices of non-compliance and request the licensee to remedy the non-compliance within a specified period. And the process is similar to the one outlined for gas. Over and above what we do in terms of licensing within gas, I think I've touched on this. We do have pre-licensing meetings with potential applicants to guide them through the process, and as well as we do do written requests for additional information where information is inadequate, and there's continuous engagement, and as well as we do try as much as we can to have workshops to empower the licensees or interested parties in terms of the regulatory frameworks that are there within the practice industry. So in terms of the main challenges, there are many, but we have chosen to highlight these ones. I think the first one I won't go through is because we have noted with much appreciation the committee's program to speed up the finalization of the gas amendment bill. However, in terms of the second challenge, Chairperson, we just want to share with members that we do often get incomplete applications from applicants, and this tend to delay some of the processing of their license application. But as indicated, we do have continuous engagement with the licensee to try and speed up and get the information that is required to finalize the assessment of their application. So the other challenge that we have within the practice industry, it's a lack of proof of tenure in terms of a lease agreement with the Ports Authority. And it's important, Chairperson, to also indicate that we are, as NESA, already working to try and coordinate our processes with the TMPA. However, there is a more streamlined process for strategic gas project that is needed. Lastly, Chair, in terms of the challenge within the gas industry, pipe gas industry, there is a lack of coordinated approach to infrastructure development, which hampers the orderly development of the pipe gas market. And in this regard, Chairperson, we are saying there is a need to finalize the development of the gas master plan, which will map out the medium to long-term gas supply and demand profile for the country. And this will also assist potential project developers to identify the demand nodes and to determine infrastructure needs. Chairperson, moving on to the last section, which is on the licensing of the electricity industry. In terms of the Act, we are empowered to issue out those four types of licenses indicated in the slide: generation licenses, distribution licenses, trading licenses, and as well as transmission licenses. We have indicated as well, Chair, the type of generation licenses that have been issued and the entities to which we have issued them to, or rather, with the exception of IPPs, just to mention it in general, that we have issued licenses to IPPs following the process of the GMRE renewable energy procurement processes, and those that have gotten approval in terms of deviation from the IPP as approved by the minister. So in terms of the next slide as well, we are mapping out the process that we follow in analyzing the applications that we have received as NESA. For those that are interested in having a license within the electricity industry, Chair, I must state that we first do also have a pre-licensing engagement with those interested entities or individuals who want to have a license within the electricity department. License within the electricity industry. Chair, we have outlined the process of we receive those applications, we assess the adequacy. When information is not adequate, we inform the applicant up until we get the required information to be able to assess the application. Chair, the process here is more or less the same as in the other two industries, in that we also require applicant to advertise. There will be a process of inspection. There will also be a process of holding public hearings. And there will also be a process where we assess the information received from public hearings and incorporate it in the submission that is going to go to the electricity subcommittee. Next slide. I think I'm already on this. To the electricity subcommittee. And once the electricity subcommittee has considered the submission, it will make recommendations to the energy regulator, where the regulator will make a final decision, and the decision will be communicated to the applicant. Chair, as also as part of the electricity industry, we are also given powers to register entities. And in terms of the registration processes, And we more or less follow the same process in terms of pre-engagement meetings with interested entities that would want to get more information on their requirements and the processes. And then we would receive an application, we check it for adequacy. Where information is adequate, the submission will be made to the subcommittee that will make a decision. Where it's not inadequate, there will be consultation processes on whatever issue that is outstanding up until all the information is received and submitted to the electricity subcommittee. And Chairperson, for registration, the processes would be finalized at the electricity subcommittee stage. In terms of licenses issued, Chairperson, we have one license for generation for Eskom municipality. So I think that slide is fairly straightforward, other than to emphasize the fact that for those entities that we have registered, there are 375 in total, and they contribute, they are below 1 megawatt, and they contribute to a total capacity of 165 megawatt. Chair, in terms of licenses issued and withdrawn and cancelled, the total licenses for distribution are 178, transmission are 2, 1 for trading a license. Chair, we have not had any license declined or withdrawn or cancelled within the electricity industry. Chair, the next slide as well also outlines some of the documents that are required in support for an application. And again, Chairperson, the next two slides as well indicate the type of type of license conditions that the regulator may impose on any licensee and on any applicant in terms of the license that is going to be issued. And these conditions are also, the imposition of these license conditions are also provided for in the Electricity Regulation Act. Chairperson, the next last slide in terms of the electricity industry is just to highlight to the committee the challenges that we are currently faced with in issuing out licenses to those interested to have a license within the electricity industry. The first one is a challenge in relation to getting the authorizations from the environmental authorization. And we have received submission from potential applicants that the process was too long and costly, and applicants do not really want to, we believe applicants do not want to spend money on the environmental authorization without being guaranteed by the regulator that they will be given a license. And to try and address this, what we have done as the regulator, we have tried to relax the requirement by allowing the applicants, a potential applicant, to apply and also have the process that is required for the environmental authorization run parallel with the licensing process of NESA. But NESA would not issue out a license until that EIA is obtained. So we'll only issue that license once the EIA is issued, and this has assisted in shortening up in some of our regulatory processes. And the second challenge, Chairperson, is that applicants do not want to undergo public hearing process, but it is a legal requirement for NESA to do this, and we are trying as much as we can to engage the applicants and the public in terms of the importance of having these particular participation processes. And as well as, Chairperson, the other challenge that is there is the requirement for connection consent letters, which differ greatly amongst the network service providers. And to address this as NESA, we are designing a regulatory rule on the third-party transportation energy, which will standardize the grid connection and wheeling requirements for all network service providers. Then lastly, Chairperson, one of the biggest challenges we have is the non-compliance with license conditions within the electricity industry, particularly by municipalities. and we are trying to intensify compliance through audits that we conduct on licensed municipalities. Chairperson, in conclusion, Chair, I would like to thank members of the committee for the opportunity given to NESA to brief them on the licensing process, and as well as that to indicate that the NESA's will continue to have a profound impact on the lives of the ordinary people as well as the economy of the country. And Chair, we also wish to indicate that the regulation of the three industries continues to pose some challenges in the energy regulator, and the energy regulator is required to balance, in that the energy regulator is required to balance the conflicting interests of licensees, investors and consumers, and as well as the policy maker. And to deal with regulated challenges, NESA is undertaking various initiatives to refine its licensing systems, regulatory practices and methodologies in its quest to become a world leader in energy regulation, and will continue to do so. I thank you, Honorable Chairperson and members, and Honorable Deputy Minister, for listening to our presentation. Thank you. You may be on mute, Deputy Minister.
No, thank you so much, Advocate, for taking us through the presentation. Chair, we've come to the end of our presentation. Thank you.
Thank you, PM, and honorable members, and the DTG, as well as NERSA. I was going to say, ADG, you still gonna have many questions to answer. I was worried with still so many Mukwenas that were given today in the presentation. That's just a joke aside. Honorable members, let's start with the, we can separate, but let's start with the presentation by the MRE on the licensing regime, and then we'll come to NERSA later. I see the hand of Honorable, we are just dealing with the licensing regime with regards to the MRE, and then we'll go later to NERSA. But you will note that in the main, all of them, they talk to the licensing regime. I see the hand of Honorable Rima. Is there any other hand? Honorable Malinga. Honorable Volmarans. Honorable Mashaule. Okay. Honorable Lorima, I will come back after Honorable Mashaule for now. Honorable Lorima.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I want to deal with the issue of the cadastral licensing system. Now, when I first joined the predecessor committee of this, the Mineral Resources Committee, in 2013, it was an issue. And those first few years were marked by essential denial by the department and by the government that this wasn't a serious issue and that SAMRAD was problematic right up until 2017. In the EPC of that year, the then minister said that not only was SAMRAD working just fine, but it was also totally transparent. Now, within a few months, it had become clear even to the department that there were problems. And we were told then that the department was looking at a new system. And the plan that they came up with was not just a cadastral system, as they have in many other countries, but an all-encompassing new IT system for the department that would integrate the cadastral system with all other systems. And I'm sorry to say that despite that, that was 3 or 4 years ago, despite the clear failure of SAMRAD, that the same track is still being traveled by the department, and that what is in the tender for the replacement for SAMRAD that has gone out is an entirely new system apart from the financial system, I believe. So that's a very high risk approach, is to replace all your internal systems at once. And it also, as you can imagine, is going to be a much longer process, because you're not just replacing your cadastral system, you're replacing an entirely new system. Now, also to that, the team that has been put onto this, and that was a team that was appointed a couple of years ago, has said that there's nothing commercially available as a cadastral system that will meet their needs, because it is an integrated system. It's not just something that deals with online mining rights applications. So they're proposing to build an entirely new custom-made system. Now, that recommendation apparently has come from the state IT agency. But this path does not have a good record. And as an example, I'd like to talk about the integrated financial management system. Now, this is a project that the state embarked on around 10 years ago. After 10 years, they had to modify it to include some off-the-shelf software. Then CETA admitted the project wasn't feasible and they had to start again. In the meantime, they've spent almost R1 billion. SIU is investigating. This is a risk that faces this department too. So after 3-4 years, the tender finally goes out. It's several hundred pages, and yet people wanting to apply only have 10 days to apply. It's also written in such a way that there is no way that an established cadastral service provider or an international company can participate. It writes them out from the beginning. And now here's my first question to the department. I would like to know whether the people who drew up the tender specification are also bidding for that tender, because I believe this is the case. My second question, this we haven't been talked about at all, is the timeline. By when are we going to have a functioning online cadastral system? Remember, this is a key blocker to new mining investment. So when will we have that timeline? I also want to know how much it's going to cost. Because I can guarantee you now that when a figure is given now, that cost will be overrun. I can also almost guarantee you that when a timeline is given, that timeline is not going to be met. So I want the department to explain themselves why they feel the need for this huge new system and why they have written the tender like they have. Thank you.
Chair, can I come in?
I said I'll come up when after Honorable Masau.
Greetings to the chairperson of the portfolio committee, my colleagues in the PC, the DM, the department component, the officials led by Advocate Mguena, representatives of NERSA and everybody on the platform, including our support staff. Chairperson, let me welcome the presentation by the department and really applaud the progress made, especially in the Mpumalanga office chair. It's really welcomed by myself, Chair. And let me also, Chair, check the timeline that has been put for the SAMRAD tender process. I think
DDG Makubela said it's somewhere in October 21. I just want to check, Chair, if the department, are they comfortable with that? Are they happy with that timeline? And in the meantime, what will be happening? That will be my question, Chair. I also heard him that the KZN offices were closed due to two issues, one being COVID and two, the diamond rush. Where he said, maybe, did you find any diamonds in Ladysmith, DDG Makubela? Because we are very keen and interested to hear if there are any that were found there. Chair, my last point will be on the issue that he made mention of in terms of the illegal digging of chrome, which was transported on our roads. I just want to check, Chair, have they involved any law enforcers? Because I think to transport or to mine any chrome, you need to have a license. Have they alerted any law enforcement to look into this matter? And how, if they have done so, how far is that process? Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I joined Honorable Malinga in welcoming the presentation from the department. The presentation that deals with the licensing regime was discussed for quite some time last year and a few months when we started. It looked like doom and gloom in terms of what we were hearing, what was presented to us. Today, the presentation that covers the 3-4 months that they have accepted, adopted, and dealt with a turnaround strategy gives some relief. There's been quite a good progress that has been established in areas, especially in Mpumalanga, where we started having a lot of complaints, both in the department and us as representatives of the public. But what I see and hear and the figures that show there's some tremendous improvement. On a number of or in a number of provinces, there have been improvement. Safe to say, Chair, that there are also challenges in other provinces. For one, the Northern Cape, there's a staffing issue, which I would want the department to elaborate on what they are going to do beyond what they have already done. Is it sufficient to relocate other staff from other provinces to go and help? And what might happen to the gap that might be left where they took the other stuff from. Whilst it is going well around the Western Cape, if they take the stuff from Western Cape to Northern Cape, it's not going to open another gap there. And a specific focus in terms of management and accountability on the regional managers, can they look into that or give more detail on what steps are they taking to empower the regional managers to be up to scratch with what they are doing? So that is what came out of Northern Cape, and the other issues that are at play might have overwhelmed the staff there, and they need to take cognizance and zoom into that. In areas like the Northwest, Chair, you have where there's a lot of minerals on tribal land or land that are communal in nature. And the communities there would be on the doorstep of the department and or the regional manager, thus taking some valuable time from strategic management to deal with issues of the communities. There's a lot of conflict among the communities families that own the pieces of land where this is taking place. What is the strategy of the department in trying to expedite such issues, because they hamper in terms of accessing the licenses and permits, and thus also have a problem with regard to the investments, impeding the investment that should flow into certain areas? And what would the strategy of the department be, including also the inadequate staffing, your vacancies and competencies within the department? I am also, Chairperson, looking at the presentation from SAMRAT, specifically with what we dealt with in the past about the service provider that can take us from where we are with the backlogs and the reliability of the system. And I agree with Honorable Malinga with regards to the time frame. Whether they are comfortable or not with the time frame is another thing, but I take solace that we are in August and we are being told that by October 2021, we would be having a service provider that deals with this. I want to hold the department to this so that in October, we don't have an issue of saying, no, we need another 3-4 months to deal with this matter. Those are my comments, Chairperson. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Chair. And thanks to both the presentations. And as we are requested to start with the first one, let me welcome the presentation by Mr. Makubela. Quite comprehensive, and it has a correlation with the presentation that we received back then. That was painting a picture that things are not well. And it takes us quite well in moving towards this presentation in order to properly assess the progress made. And we want to make clear that we welcome the progress made thus far. We must take you back, DM and the chair and the DG, that when we made a call to have this item tabled in the portfolio committee, it was as a consequence of the point that communities were not happy. Businesses were not happy with the system that is used to issue licenses in their different categories. Communities were not happy in the manner in which the department was responding to their issues. Communities were alleging malfeasance, acts of malfeasance in regional offices. And I want you to go back and understand that that was the point why we brought the matter to the table. Have we resolved that? No, we are in the process of resolving that. But that aspect, it's some aspect in the three frustrations that I've made. And the backlog, progress is being made. But I don't feel that, Mr. Makubela, that we are paying more attention to the grievances, the complaints that are coming from communities directly. And I'm saying this because, and I, as I've said before, that we are inundated with letters, emails, WhatsApps, calls by members of the communities. Who want to understand or cry to us that the department is not assisting them in resolving their problems. And that boils down to a regional level. And you know, when you report progress, you in your categorization of numbers that improved and that are outstanding, you do say that some will look like you are not making progress because in the midst of attending to the backlog, new applications, grievances, and so forth comes to the system. So you are back and forth in terms of numbers. And I want to suggest that, Chair, so that we do not disturb the good work that Mr. Makubele and his chief directors are doing in supporting the dysfunctional regional offices. Some are functional, some are not, but many are not. We concentrate on having them continue with the work that they're doing in addressing the backlog. But we get a more centralized way of dealing with the grievances that you and I and others may be receiving from the community. We have dealt with before letters that came directly from the speaker referred to us, and I can tell you some of them have not been responded to. And I'm saying, I'm sponsoring a suggestion, Chair, that maybe we need to be systematic on how we address this issue so that we are sure and certain that the department is responsive to the immediate quarrels from communities. And it must be said, Chair, we are not saying as members of the committee, when there's a complaint, we want to see a positive response at all costs. We're not saying that. We are saying follow processes, make sure you pay attention to the complaints, respond to the complaints, whether negative or positive. There's one thing that goes a long way from a department to a community member who has nothing but just making a follow-up, is to respond, a response, even to acknowledge receipt of an email or a WhatsApp message or a call, goes a long way and say, I will respond to this matter. We're still doing investigation on your matter. You respond, and the community will say, we are having a Department of Mineral Resources and Energy. That's all we want. And I'm saying, maybe this issue should really be in the shoulders of the DG himself so that we hold him accountable when these things are persisting and there are no responses to the community's needs. Thank you very much.
Thank you, members. DM, and let me make these comments because they may help in the provision of answers so that I don't rework what has been worked by my colleagues. First, safe to say, it's good news. It's so nice to hear the workload. And I'm not questioning nor having doubts. Congratulations. I think you have done a good job. But the flip side of it, Mr. McCobert, is that now you will end up being a victim of your own success. There's few issues that for me, to start from where Honorable Mashaule ended, is that you will recall that there were complaints directed to the committee. And my fear is when I stand up tomorrow and say the report from the department is that all those complaints have been attended to and proper answers were given, whether positive or negative. So I think it will be, for me, if you don't have this those answers now, we may have to provide that still. Whether the complaints that we were submitted and were subject of the committee, so that we can respond to the people who had corresponded with the department, with the committee. Although my only fear is when the committee might end up being a platform of appeals forum. I'm not sure whether we have that capacity. I think the point that Honorable Mashaula was saying, that in the manner in which that the performance of work is being done, it should be systematic to an extent that there is confidence in the department. The second thing, the reason I'm saying you are a victim of your own success, there's a dilemma. Maybe you can help and clarify this. You've got a system that was believed to be non-functional or not yielding the necessary results. Now the question will be, the success story that we are dealing with now, is it something that happened under the same system that you are using? And if that is the case, does that not send a message that we may not necessarily have the big problem with the system, but with the human current in the system? And I dare say, does that not send something that says it's a true reflection of lack of consequent management and manipulation of that system? Because you were able, even if you were a team, you were able to go there, work out the system. Now remember, in the initial presentation, there was something that you said is a turnaround time for a person, I think for a prospecting right, you said it's 2078. And which was the question I was asking, that if then, will it be a reasonable assumption that if somebody lodges on the 14th, because public servants mainly are paid on the 15th, on the 14th of that month, it means that the following month on the 15th, the same person who's sitting there, primarily responsible for the first initiative of the system, will get paid on the 15th of the following month without doing anything on that application. That's just a ridiculous example. Now, it takes us to the next step, which we said we're going to deal with. I'm not questioning the correctness of the information. The last time, I'm not sure if I'm not mistaken, just for Mpumalanga, I think you were about 1,400 and something, if I'm not mistaken. And you look at the numbers now, drastically reduced. Will then be correct to say the biggest problem here is that we had a problem of human character? One. Two, we've got a system, which I think honorable members are correct, that unfortunately is prone to manipulation, with the lack of a correct word. But linked to this is that what mechanisms could be made? Because I hate on Mr. Makubela. I'm not questioning. I've never done that before, and I'm not gonna do it now. But just for human purposes, I'm trying to think that I'm sitting here as a member of parliament. How do I stand by what you say as a true reflection of what really has happened? Because I may come here and say, no, you have made this drastic measure. And then somebody comes and say, no, the information you have given is not necessarily a correct one. And I'm saying it is something that I should stand by your word, but do I have something that I can argue strongly as proof that this is exactly what has happened? Like an auditing system of the information. I think that's one of the things we might need, that as you perform the work, there must be a way where you say, this is where we deposit all the progress work that has been done, so that it does not become a word of mouth. Lastly, which is again my point. I'm worried about this procurement that you are talking about. I might be wrong, please help me. From one time, about 4 years or so ago, where the briefing was given, it was by, what do you call this thing? information what officer, chief information officer. And the question would be, what happened to that process, that procurement, if there was any? Maybe we would say there was no procurement. What happened to that initial procurement? Is this one still linked to that one, or is it a completely new one? I think the other thing that were raised by members is something that you can assist us. Whether are there any cumulative costs that goes with that procurement, and to what extent are we sure that what is being recommended is what this thing wants? Lastly, is there no consideration that the ease of doing business is to the extent that there is already available data that by anyone anywhere across the globe can make it easy and to understand where commodity investment could be made? At this stage, with all the system of exploration, sometimes it's what I usually say, it's like we're playing finder. You can do it, you may not know, but it might be easy for people to invest their money where there is open data available that they can access, and whether that should be under the custodian of the department or somewhere of your entities, maybe something that we can take consideration of. So I just wanted to add those things, which to me they are directly linked or is augmenting a clarity. I have no doubt that with the information, at least there is a lot of improvement that has happened. Although that improvement may send be more like an indictment on what is it that Rubati has made it so difficult to do this thing in the manner that it has happened. Now, amongst other issues, is that surely there has to be some form. The issue was to resolve the backlog. The issue was to ensure that there's progress and the transparency in the exercise, which I think is a progress. But we can't, as a committee of parliament, we don't end there. Part of our duty is to ensure that then there is enforcement of consequence management. Have you conducted a thorough investigation? The last time we checked, there was an investigation which led to the closure of this office. My biggest problem is that you might be utilizing the same people who have put us in the same problem that we are dealing with today. What action has been taken to be specific to those individuals that you have found that they've made us to be in this problem that we have? So I think we can clarify, if we can get that clarity, because COVID and other things that came yesterday, these things, some of them are old. Oh, no, the last thing here, unfortunately, this information, one of the things we raised was that it would have been nice to get the backlogs according to the era. For an example, we would know, it might be possible that most of these backlogs you have resolved, most of them were just those of yesterday. And there could be some that are still remaining unresolved, and they are very old. Some of them, we should be regarding them to have expired. So if you can clarify also, is there a way where you can get a template or system that reflects the era of the applications and the granting of the license? CDM and your team.
No, thank you.
Is it only me who can hear?
Things that we have picked up in our system, and we are making a commitment that we are going to improve where there are gaps, Chair. But there is one issue that, to an extent, Honorable Mashauli tried to actually respond to the question that has been raised by Honorable, maybe I'm not going to pronounce the surname correctly, but I think it's Lorima. The question that was around the software or the electronic system that is being procured, where Honorable Mashaule did put into context the rationale behind the committee taking this decision of configuration and installation of this internal system, that basically it was in the way of trying to respond to the needs of our communities, business sectors, and all the relevant stakeholders, because there were a lot of grievances that were coming, and it was then alleged that the system was a bit prone to manipulation. So I believe what we're trying to do is to close all those gaps that have been identified. But some of the questions that are more operational, for instance, the one that speaks about whether those people or the team that was responsible for drawing up the specification are also given an opportunity to bid for the tender, the team is going to respond to that. And to put more into context again the motivation around the system, it is going to assist us in that regard. Honorable Malinga then, Chair, spoke about the timelines, that it is going to respond to that as well, and whether the diamond rush would then resulted in the closure of the offices in KZN, whether did we get the diamond or not, then they are going to respond again to that. The issues around the staffing and which then impacts negatively to our performance, where we then sometimes second one official from one province to another, what impact it does in relation to our performance, obviously it is going to have a very negative impact. But I remember the Mr. I'm still trying to learn the surname. The presenter of this presentation did indicate that the minister made a commitment that as the department we are still in a process of relooking our organizational structure. All those issues will be attended to. Let me then invite the DJ and the team to respond to some of the questions that have been raised. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Deputy Minister. As you have indicated, I will deal with the first part of the questions and invite BPG Maqhubela together with the team to respond to more of the technical questions that have been asked. Starting with the comments, I think we welcome the comments from Honorable Lorima. He has dealt with the history into to this matter, which recently we have made it very clear that as a department we are not married to Samrat. But the Honorable Member was just giving a reflection in terms of where you started with the engagements with the department around some of that system, which the minister also confirmed that the system is not really addressing the challenges as the department. Hence, the decision was then taken that we must then replace this SAMRAD system. Coming to the specific questions, Chair and Honorable Members, of course, in terms of governance, you know, you can't be part of the process in which you are going to bid, and obviously the department does not have business people, and so the officials that in the IT side, they are only helping with their technical expertise to develop the terms of reference and everything, even CETA as well. They have assisted on the technical level. As you know, that CETA, as the State Information Technology Agency, is empowered by law, you know, in this space. And so that's what we have done. The direct response to Honorable Lorima is that, no, we don't have people that who are part of a drawing up of the bid that are going to participate in this tender. In terms of by when it will be readily available, we the tender is closing now, and so obviously we are looking around November that you know, whoever that will be a successful bidder should be able to start. Now, when it comes to cost, I would like, with all you know, due respect, that maybe it's a question that we can't deal with at the moment because the tender is just about to close, if that will be fine with the honorable member. Now, on the question of, in fact, we gave them 21 days. I remember that there was also even an assertion that this system is available on the shelves and so forth. And so now we gave the service providers a period of 21 days to respond, of which we believe that it is not unreasonable. It is governed by the law as well. And so where there are issues, I'm sure there are, you know, relevant governance structures or processes in which those issues can be dealt with. Yes, the tender has many pages. The intention for that is to clarify questions if there are any issues. That is why we have so many questions in the tender. I would invite Kathy at the end if maybe there will still be any other issues that we must address around the, you know, the system that we have advertised. That, I mean, you know, we believe that the time that we gave it should be sufficient. Now, there was also an invitation, a compulsory briefing session. And now the aim of that briefing session was precisely to clarify any issues or questions from the bidders. And so that actually has been done. Of course, there may be people that may still want to raise issues, but the department has made it very clear that we are available to deal with what questions that you know, they are having. Now, the bidders were also given a week to send whatever additional questions that they may be having, and so Kathy can deal with that part as to what transpired out of that process. Now, we don't actually, you know, exclude the international bidders. If they so wish to participate, they can participate in this tender. Now, the implementation, it is actually in a staggered approach. It is not, you know, big bang. Now, the priority, as we have been presenting to the PPC, is the replacement of SAMRAT that will be followed by other additional MPRDA functionality and also optimization. Now, this will be achieved, of course, within the first year. And now that is actually our response in regard with the questions from the honorable member. And as for the motivation, I think we all know that we have been experiencing a challenge with SAMRAT. Hence, we had to change and get a new system that would enable us to attract more investment, as per also the pronouncement by the minister, honorable minister. The questions relating to, I think Mr. Makubela will deal with the other questions from honorable Malinga. Let me deal with the part of the questions of honorable Walmarans. We have taken note, honorable member, in terms of the strategy that we need to put in place. And so I think a DDG would also put more emphasis on this because we do have a plan in place. Now, with the amalgamation of the two departments, we do have staff members that are in access. And now the issue is that we clearly understand that the mandate of the department is quite dynamic. Now, with the resources that we are having, we must be able to address whatever service delivery issues that we are having in the department. Now, on this one as well, we have established a unit that is mainly dealing with community facilitation whenever we have issues that emanate from our communities. And so we have started with the process of establishing this specific directorate. The director has been appointed. But then as for the issues of community, maybe I thought that your question, it is also linked when you spoke about the communal land. As you know, that there is also a provision in law in terms of Section 104 of the MPRDA, which makes a specific a provision for the communal land. Community members can apply directly to the minister for the prospecting rights, which would ultimately graduate into the mining right. But there is a plan in place to address all the issues so that you know, the DDG, together with the team, they must be able to focus on the strategic issues. Those that are in the region as well must be able to deal with hardcore operational issues on the ground. Now, we clearly understand that the stability of the industry in that manner will help us. Now, without taking a lot of time, I can also confirm that we have started a process with the Minerals Council as well, which I believe I would also link this to the question that Honorable Mika has also asked, and even, you know, the comment that he has made, that there is what we call a one-stop shop that we have established. And so here we are dealing with all multiple issues that are coming from different companies. Now, the issue that has been raised sharply here is that we must also involve our communities as well. Now, the point that Honorable Mika has raised is that there must be a strategy that we put in place in which there is a dedicated you know, office or dedicated personnel that deals specifically with all the issues that have been raised by members of community. Because from time to time, as you know, you as public representatives, you do receive those complaints through your parliamentary processes and channels, and now they need to come to the department. And now we need to process those issues and come up with a responses within a reasonable period of time. And so this point has been actually noted, and we'll make sure that it gets the necessary practical expression that it deserves. And so I think the other issues, honorable members, you know, coming to the feeling of or the post, vacant post in the organization, those issues would be looked into. We have started even from last year in advertising quite a number of positions, especially for the line function branches in the department. As you know, that for program one, we do have you know, staff that is in excess. Now, the other point that has been raised, I think from the chair, it is the guarantee that we can give to you as the committee, you know, that whatever that we have reported here is indeed a true reflection. Maybe it may be disputed by someone. Now, we do have an audit directorate in the department. Part of their responsibility is also to go out and make sure that they do audit of the work that has been done by different branches. I think, Chair, as it has been raised by your good self and members, and so it is a matter that you also consider to make sure that whatever that we present here is a credible information, and so not to suggest that maybe what we have presented here is not credible. Now, the other issue that you have raised, Chair, is the matter that you are still dealing with, is the issue of a human factor into the system. That is a contributory factor as well. We did actually, you know, take the necessary measures also to discipline those that were found to be on the wrong side of the law. And so we'll continue in doing that. So the reports are available of what we have been able to do and to achieve to date in dealing with such elements. But the DDG, I think, will give more detailed information around some of the issues. But we really appreciate the comments and also some of the constructive criticism that you have leveled against us. As the DM, you know, has indicated, and DM as the leader of the delegation, we would actually, you know, also, you know, give that assurance before delegate into DM, of course, because I'm here, you know, under her supervision as well. And so, Chair, I'm going to pause there and invite DDG Makubela, and at the end, the Chief Information Officer can also comment on some of the issues, especially in relation with the cadastral system that we are now in the process of concluding. We are quite excited about this, you know, that we have finally managed to come to this point. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair and GM and members. Over to you, DDG Makubela.
Thank you very much, DG. Thank you, Honorable DM, Honorable members. I, as DG has indicated, I'm going to try and respond to some of the issues. Firstly, I really appreciate the comments from honorable members in appreciating the work that the team has done. And I want to state very clearly here that this has been a team effort. The fact that there is the representatives of the people of our country can see the progress is actually going to help us to do more. We do this work as a team with three chief directors responsible for licensing. We have a committee of six, which includes Ms. Malapane, Ms. Kobe, Ms. Ngambule, Mr. Tutra, and Ms. Kanyile. We constitute the licensing committee. And so all the numbers that are presented here basically have gone through that licensing committee. We keep minutes of all our meetings, and they are auditable. The records are there to be audited. So I cannot say, this is a team effort, as I say. So the credit needs to go to the team. The Mpumalanga office, I think, first of all, we found out, if I can just talk to Samrat a little bit, that part of the challenge was that colleagues were not updating the system for one reason or the other. So what we found to be working is when you insist on the updating of the system, and you just need to be firm on the need for the system to be updated. And if somebody does not update information, then they have to account for that. And I think that practice then has also helped to improve the credibility of the operation. Now, in as far as the issue raised by Honorable Malinga on the diamonds, we so wish at least these were diamonds. Unfortunately, these turned out to be quartz crystals, and the value is really much much more limited compared to diamonds. But what we have then said is that the communities must be taken through the process of licensing to understand that even for the quartz, you have to get a license to undertake any form of activity. And that, I think, the regional team is doing quite well. On the issue of the chrome, illegal mining, there is the reality is that there is a syndicate that is operating in the chrome environment. There is no doubt about that. We've come to that conclusion, not only ourselves, but also with the SAPS, the South African Police Service. And through the intervention of the DG, we have a team that is looking at all illegal activity in the mining sector. That team has got work streams, and we are hard at work now to try and deal with the issue of illegal mining. In the department, what has happened is that we've recently appointed someone who's experienced in enforcement, who previously came from SAPS, and I think his presence in the department has already borne some fruit. We've been able to assist SAPS in making some breakthroughs with investigations and arrest in the illegal mining space. The question raised by Honorable comments from Honorable Volmarans. It is true, as DJ has indicated, that when we move stuff around, then the other provinces can suffer. But what we have decided with the team led by Ms. Ngambule is that the colleagues from the Western Cape will help Northern Cape, some of them from their Western Cape offices, because some of the help is really systems assistance, which can then be done online from wherever a person is. So we do know that there will be some impact, but we've tried to, as much as possible, to minimize it. On the issue of the malfeasance raised by Honorable Mashaole, the consequence management is being implemented. And the internal audit through the DG conducts investigations where people have are found to be on the other side of the departmental processes. We take action. And I think that is work that is ongoing, because that also encourages the culture to change, to say that let me not take chances here, because you know there will be consequences. So we will continue with that effort to make sure that where internal audit has been able to advise management, then we need to implement. The issue on the communities, I wish to acknowledge that we can do more there, as indicated by Honorable Mashaole, and we can commit that you know, we will do things slightly differently. One of them is that we may need to look at the decentralization of the community and stakeholder engagement, not just have one central point at head office, but also then look at whether, you know, some of the key regions shouldn't have this function. The issues raised by the chair, I think they've been covered to a large degree by the DG. But in as far as the SAMRAD system, maybe linking it to the comment made by Honorable Lorima, what we did is that as the user, we gave the specification, and in developing this specification, we consulted through the DG. We even consulted other mining experts in as far as Canada. We on a call to just get a sense of the kind of system that we would require. Those were then given, and I think the experts then have developed the terms of reference that have gone out. As the user, we are slightly removed from the process currently, and we await the outcome. The last thing that I would want to deal with is what the chair has said. The human character, I think we do have to constantly look at our culture, you know, and improve as we go along. So what we've found is that if all of us know that someone else has an interest in the work I do, you try as much as possible and limit any possibility for manipulation. We can't say that manipulation has not been there. Where these have been brought to our attention, these are being dealt with. We do have some of those cases that are with us, and I can assure the committee that we are going to deal with those. The last point is the dating of the information. We will indeed make sure that we date the information. The one that was dated was Mpumalanga. We dated those, and as I indicated, we have eradicated, you know, 2012, 13, 14, 15. We are in the process of finalizing 16. And pretty soon we will be able not to have applications that are, you know, older than 3 years in our system. I think the last one, I think that basically is all I would respond to. If I've left any, I do apologize. Thank you very much. Thank you, DJ. Thank you, Dan.
Thank you.
I guess you are done. Who did you know the procedure? But I guess you are done. Before I say that, I see the head of Honorable Lorema.
Hey, Mr. Chair, I'd just like to make some follow-ups on those answers. If you're having difficulty hearing me, just please do interrupt me. Look, what wasn't addressed was the key question: by when will we have a credible working cadastral system?
Come back, Honorable.
I understand partially the DG's reason for being coy about the cost, but you must have a budget.
I hope I'm not the only one. You lost me. I think probably everyone. But...
thank you, the park is. Okay, sorry, I'm just going to repeat that first question. By when will we have a working, credible cadastral system? Secondly, on the question of the reasons we need an expensive, risky, purpose-built system rather than an off-the-shelf system. I'm sure it's nice to have, but it is vital that we have a working cadastral system soon if we want to unlock development. That's why I'm being very particular about time frames. I'd like to know about when we're going to have this. I do understand to an extent why the DG is being coy about giving us those figures, but you must have a budget. Can we know whether we're talking about 50 million rand in the ballpark of 100 million rand, 500 million or more? Give us an indication of how much this is going to cost. And I'll tell you why that's important, because once we have that, we can compare it to an off-the-shelf system that's tried and tested in the market. It's fairly easy to get one of those. Now, in drawing up the specifications, we're told that you did consult with mining experts in Canada. I don't believe you consulted with any cadastral companies that have marketed successful cadastral products. I wonder, and I'd like to know, whether you consulted with Botswana, which is just...
You are not
a control system. On the question, the precondition on so I'd like all those addressed, please.
The problem is that towards your latter part, you went under the tunnel. Can you repeat the latter part? The last part.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. I'm experiencing some signal collapse. Okay. Last part is to do with shutting out international companies. And the reason they've been shut out is because there's a pre-specification on this bid. Bidders have to be
yes, I system but we are political.
Okay, but I think we got the gist of the last part, which
and
is about
petition, including people who have established this and also a new cadastral system, which even with having to sort out all the old data would be active within a year. I want to know what the department's answer to that request was and why they didn't accept it. Thank you.
Okay.
Chair, Ms. Kleso is going to take the follow-up question. Thank you.
Thank you, GM. Thank you, Chairperson and the Honorable Ministers and my colleagues. I would like to start with the first one about shutting out international companies. I think DG has touched on it, and maybe it wasn't clear enough. I think the government has a mandate to transform, especially the ICT sector. And in the bid specification, it says if you're an international company, you need to partner with a local company and impart the skills so that you can power the country so that we don't depend on international companies. So I am not sure if that would have been the exclusion that the member is talking about, but we need to transform the country, and there is no compromise that we need them to come, but they need to partner with us and make sure they can leave us with something. On the second issue about when will we have the working system, I think let me first clarify, members, that we're going to have a staggered approach to this implementation. The reason it's 2 years, it doesn't mean we are going to wait from December to the second year, the following December. We're going to have a phased approach of this implementation. The first year, we should have somewhat stable and working. The outer years will be implementing the other modules that are for the other branches. And as you would understand, the license system is a value chain, members. Us just focusing on exposing the data, allowing the client to apply, and not monitoring compliance, nor them giving back to the economy, it will not serve the purpose of us investing in this big system. So the other functionality that we are incorporating into the system, hence we are doing the full revamp, is to incorporate the entire value chain to say when the production stats are declared, are they the correct production stats? Are we giving back to the economy? Are we building roads? The social labor plans, are they monitored? And we can kill most of the issues we're having, like communities complaining about irresponsible mining and all of that. So that is the value chain we build into the system. Hence, we're revamping the entire cycle. We did not call it just the cadastral system. On the other issue on the reason we need an expensive system rather than the off-the-shelf, I think we need to just clarify the member that we did consult the industry. We did consult the mining companies and Special Dimension at the time, who is the successful bidder at Botswana. If the member can verify with them, they were consulted during this process 4-3 years ago before we put the specification together. So we've done our homework, and what we've seen and what we've learned with the SAMRAT we have now is we try to buy off the shelf and we try to force our processes into this system until it could not support the processes. So in the normal ICT enables business, and the system must supply what the process says, not the processes try to fit in into the system to make it work. So that's why we could not find off the shelf that will come in readily and without being customized or even compromised, us being told at a later stage that we can't change it. And in addition to that is that we wanted a system where we need to own the syscode so that we don't have evergreen contracts. By the time this is done and it's stable, we need to train over our people to be able to support this in-house. The service provider becomes an escalation point when we know that we have exhausted everything and now we can't. But with some of these models, we find that the service provider will forever service us because they own the IP, they own the software, we don't have access to what we would have invested millions on. And that becomes a contract forever. So on the compilation of the specification, I think I've touched on that, and we've put the detail that was required on there. And I think I've touched on all of them, but also to add on the issue of the time given for the companies to respond. We attempted to give the detail. We attempted in the briefing session to unpack that detailed document. We also have given the companies a week thereafter to still ask questions of clarity. So as a department, we feel we have met the industry more than halfway to enable them to respond to our request adequately. Thank you, CM, thank you, DG, and Chairperson and members.
Yes, Chair, we don't check.
Okay, thank you very much. Let's just say, probably, honourable members, we will need to consider as time goes on to look at mechanisms on how to handle matters of this nature as a way of finding a common solution for all of us to have a common understanding, but also to make possibility of an efficient system that can help to ensure that we fast track this process. I think it's something that will come back so that we separate the licensing process from the hiccups that we are confronted with. We will come back to the department. Let's say this is not exhausted. We were in the main dealing with the problems with regard to the current licensing system. We might have to have a broader engagement with even other stakeholders, particularly those that we work with very closely, be it the institutions like the employer body, in this case, institutions like your minerals councils. We may have to do consultation with your emerging small-scale mining. It may also have to take into consideration engaging with labor. And if it needs to be getting the wisdom, even in the academic field, on a comparison study on the models as far as the licensing is concerned, both especially in mining, because we end up with more of the time being consumed on mining. I'm not saying the department is wrong. It may continue to procure, but the problem is when you procure and only to realize that what you have got that is new is now old in the market. We are in an environment where developments are very fast, and by the time you put in a new system, it is an old system in other areas. So I'm just saying that maybe we must expand and say what are the best models of licensing in the mining industry. Looking at the global level, and then maybe we may be able to say this is how best we can mitigate the challenges that we have. But thanks for the progress report that we've received with regards to those issues. Except to say, I'm still of the view that we may have to go back to the main reasoning and be able to give answers directly to those people who had raised concerns with the portfolio committee. Can we go to NERSA? Those who want to comment, I'll tell you, NERSA, with all your good work and the presentation that you have made, I don't have any major comments. I'm just worried about one thing, that I was just saying to myself, if it takes so much to explain the licensing process, how much more it does it take at a practical level for someone to ordinarily understand what is happening? But without any further ado, I don't have any take on the next presentation. I see the hand of Honorable Lorima, the hand of Honorable Mylem.
Sorry, Mr. Chair, old hand.
Oh, okay. Honorable Luis, Honorable Mylem, is there any other hand? Honorable Mashaule? Okay. Honorable Mylem?
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, first of all, I'd like to draw nurses' attention to one of the perennial complaints from role players in the energy sector, and that is that the process of licensing takes far too long and is far too bureaucratic. And if we are to see a rapid rollout of economic activity, if we're to see a transformation of the industry, we need to make it easier and quicker for businesses and role players to get licensed and receive those licenses. We need to make it simpler and easier for them to do so. So I guess what I'm saying is I'm not feeling that NERSA is taking adequate steps to address its internal bureaucracy. That's the first point. The second, sort of related, is that the public participation processes seem overly lengthy and very drawn out, and we need to find a way of enabling public participation, and it might well be through submissions, written submissions or the like, but to have public hearings as frequently as NERSA does is an expensive undertaking in the current environment, in the COVID environment. It's a difficult undertaking, and I think it's a process that needs to be better managed and better streamlined. So the nuts and bolts of what I'm saying is that the efficiencies, and one of the slides mentioned that NERSA seeks to be an efficient and effective licensing regulator. Well, honestly, it doesn't feel like that if you're someone applying for a license, whether it's in the petroleum sector or in the electricity sector or wherever. It doesn't feel like NERSA is an efficient and effective licensing regulator. And so what we need to see is a plan to make it easier, quicker, and simpler for businesses to apply for and obtain licenses while still maintaining the necessary regulatory oversight. And so I want to ask NERSA, what are their plans to ease the burden on businesses that are applying? And how do they plan to speed up the process? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson. And let's welcome the presentation by NERSA. Very comprehensive. Detailed. I just have two things, Chair. One is not related to the presentation itself, but the manner in which I've observed the department to do things, as well as its entities. You know, Chair, it may be a small thing, but it's important to us that when an entity loses a chair or a CEO, and then somebody is brought, acting or appointed, some formal communication should come to the chair, so that as members of the portfolio committee we are abreast with that. And I'm raising that because for so long we would get an introduction of a person who's appointed either permanent or acting. In the day, the person must make a presentation to us. And that does not gel well because once you get used to a person's name, it's a bit difficult to get used to another name unless it's provided to you in advance. But also, you can't hear from the street that the chair of this entity is no longer this one, it's that one. I think the courtesy, we're not saying we must participate in how you appoint people and all of that, but the courtesy to inform the committee that there are these changes and that change as and when we move forward. The second point, Chair, is really to ask NERSA whether, you see, they've made a presentation and say, well, in generation, they've given so-and-so licenses, including private people or businesses. In distribution, they've done so and so forth. Now, if, and it's an example, this one, that say, for instance, the number of licenses given for distribution to private, 12 private distributors, is it possible for us to be furnished with the names of those people? Because you do mention that you have licensed ESCOM, and ESCOM is an entity that is known. Why is it not the same with private distributors that you say we have licensed Mahlaul and so and so and so? You say you call them private distribution. We need their names. We need the entities of those distributors. That's the way you have specified ESCOM. Thank you very much.
Okay, NERSA through DM.
Now, let me just invite Advocate Sithole to respond to the questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Deputy Minister, Honorable Chairperson, and Honorable Members, and the DG. Chairperson, in responding to the question raised by Honorable, and I hope I pronounced the name correctly, Melham, we do note the issue that he raised in terms of complaints about NERSA licensing process being long and very bureaucratic. Chairperson, as I have indicated in our licensing process, that there are certain provisions in the Act that we are required to comply with. And in terms of some of those processes, there are specified timeframes that are provided in the Act. And in some of those processes, the timeframes that have been provided were passed in terms of the rules governing the particular industry. And in terms of the rules that were developed on the timeframes for the different industries, what NERSA has done, NERSA did go through a process of public participation with interested and affected parties within the industries, and the timelines that have been used are based on what on the process that we followed with through the public participation process. Chairperson, we note that that they are lengthy, and as NERSA, we have indicated that our objective as well is to constantly review these particular timeframes, and we are intending to start a project as well in this financial year to look at those processes and also look at how we can reduce them without really contravening the provisions of some of the pieces of legislation that we are required to comply with, one of them being PAJA, Chairperson, and as well as those specific provisions that are in our piece of legislation. So this is the process, Chairperson, that we are going to be undertaking in terms of reducing those processes, because we are aware of some of the issues raised in that particular in those particular processes that, or timeframes that we are having to comply with currently in considering license application. Chairperson, with regard to the issues of details in terms of entities that have been licensed, we will in future provide full particulars of all those entities in all the regulated industries, including the private distributors that have been mentioned by Honorable Mashaule, such that we give members a fuller picture of who has been licensed in terms of all licenses that we issue in the different industries, not only in electricity. Chairperson, I think I will stop there in terms of the responses on issues that have been raised on our presentation. Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Honorable Deputy Minister.
Thank you so much, Advocate. Chair, we are done. We have done responding to the questions that have been asked by the members of the portfolio committee. Thank you.
Thank you, DM and NERSA, as well as the department. Let me check first. Okay. Look, as I always say, when you come to the portfolio committee, it is about getting more clarity and information on what are the issues that I attend. Provide our own collective wisdom on how we view certain things and what do we think has to be done, but at the same time to point out where we feel that there are areas that do not necessarily assist going forward and get that clarity. So from time to time, we will continue to look at issues at hand. And therefore assist where we can, critique where we feel that it is necessary, it requires some degree of criticism. And therefore we appreciate what has been received. But I'm sure, most definitely, we all put efforts to ensure that there is a better improvement. Like I said, with regard to some of these issues, we may have to come back specifically on what do we think is an appropriate way of dealing and managing certain situations. We want, and I must say, we want to, at all material times, carry the flag high in doing the best in terms of delivery. But at the same time, we know, all of us, that we may not be perfect, but we must always do things the right way, with extreme commitment to the needs of our people. So thank you very much, DM. It's not a detention. It's a work program that dictates us to take up until to this time. Let's keep the meeting adjourned until tomorrow. Tomorrow we will be dealing with the fourth quarter report and then the sets of minutes. Probably in the sets of minutes, when we deal with matters arising, most of the issues that could be outstanding, we'll iron them there and agree on how to put matters to close. On that note, is there any other thing I announcement that I did not make?
Nothing from my side, Chair.
Okay. On that note, honorable members, the meeting stands adjourned until tomorrow. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair.